there were some U.S. Blackhawks, or at least U.S. procured Blackhawks, did some special operations insertion in this area right here. There was one that was some video that was shown of the insertion, and apparently video showing two separate Blackhawks in flight. So we don't know what happened to those. What can you tell us about these Blackhawks?
We would assume that these were Americans who were flying them. Actually, there were two insertion so-called operations with the creme de la creme or whatever is left of this special forces of GUR, which is this, well, essentially GUR, which is the intelligence agency of the Ukrainian Defense Ministry, is essentially the outlet of CIA. Basically, there are some big CIA paras there. So there were three Black Hawks. There are two of them down. I believe one was destroyed on the ground. The other was shut down trying to escape. The other one turned around. And so the couple of the, actually, one major, another captain, I believe, don't quote me on that. But one of major of these forces, special forces, have been taken prisoner of war. And so information is they are searching for some big CIA people there. The only way for these CIA people is to escape probably right now, because they are blocked, is probably towards Mirnograd if they somehow try to escape. If not, they will be either killed or captured. And that's simple as that. And that is why so much panic and desperation on part of basically suicide missions. This is
let me ask you that. I mean, I actually have conducted some of these helicopter inserted special operations missions while I was on one particular mission in Afghanistan. And, you know, that is something that was wired very tight. We had lots of support in the air and all kinds of other overhead support should we need it here. There's none of that here. So what in the world would go into even launching such a mission like this? What possible benefit could it do to Ukraine?
Oh, there's no benefit. And people who plan those, first, you have to understand, CIA and people from NATO staffs, American, British, whatever. For them, Ukrainians are cannon fodder. They are subhumans. They throw them in. They don't care how many of them killed. Plus, as you said, it is one thing what you were doing in Afghanistan. In there, as you can see yourself, this is all Russians seeing it 24/7. Every minute, every movement is controlled. And it all just a matter of the rook, what is called a recon strike and recon fire complex, how Russians react and what do they do in terms of, for example, do they want to kill all group? No. The first group which was there, you can see there are videos of them. They, out of 11 people, 8 have been killed immediately. And others have been basically, you know, taken. And whatever their counter-insertion operation done on Russian side, they are very good-level professionals, and they have their full tactical and situational awareness of the area. And that's why we know it now for sure. The search is for those big CIA hunches, you know, paramilitaries. And as I already stated, it's doubtful that they can escape. So they either will be taken prisoners or will be killed or maybe will commit suicide. So it's just the way it is.
It's just hard for me to fathom. But doing something like this, the mission I was on, for example, it was about two or three Taliban people that our group was supposed to be going after. But I mean, this was just the edge of a huge battlefield that you're already on the lower side. So I don't even know what the objective would be. What would they even be saying to try and accomplish other than
they are incompetent. That's the whole point. This is the point.
It's hard for me to imagine that level of incompetence.
Easily. I spoke to people like Brandon Weikert. He was a professional congressional staffer, and he played the Pentagon games. He confirmed what we know. Most of the intel, for example, a Pentagon receives, is from Kiev. So it's not intel, it's propaganda. And only few people, and obviously some colonels and brigadier generals who sit in the operational planning departments, which doesn't matter what they say. You literally have people who, I give you one example. There are morons, you know what, with the senior ranks in, for example, Institute of the Study of the Modern War from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. They really believe that Patriot Pac-3 can shoot down hypersonic targets. They do believe it. You know why? Because Ukrainians told them. And those guys, they sit there, they get this garbage in, and they make, oh, look at our, you know, prowess. And they still do not understand. Operationally, they are amateurs. They, this has been going on for years, and they have to understand what side they're dealing with.
There doesn't seem to be, but I want to kind of drive home something I mentioned at the outset of this, that Pokrovsk is in the headlines right now and just making all kinds of news for reasons that are not good for the Ukraine side, but it's not the only one. So we've already talked about Dnipropetrovsk. This is the Pokrovsk area. I want to go over here to Konstantinivka. Because there's also been, Russia's continued now moving actually in the outskirts of Konstantinivka. What can you tell us about this? Because this one is not in a semi-cauldron here. Where is this from the Russian perspective?
They maintain that the holding force, which absolutely is not going to go there for now and in an active way, as it is done in Kupiansk, and now is happening actually at Seversk. It's a classic operational stretching. The holding force, which, you know what, attracts some force of the whatever is remaining armed forces of Ukraine in order to stretch them on other operational axes. And other operational axes is what? There's Kupiansk, obviously, and now Seversk. Seversk is being surrounded as we speak. So it's basically pinning down the force. Classic, you know, operational art 101.
So here's Seversk. What's happening right here?
Yeah, Seversk, yeah. Seversk is, it's actually the map changed dramatically since, I don't know whose map is that, but now Seversk is being surmised, getting ready to be operationally surrounded. Not tactically, but operationally, that means that all the exits will be fire controlled by Russian troops. And that's another thing which is going to be happening. And it is all about essentially finishing off, as I already stated, that it's all about killing the enemy, period. It's physical annihilation of the force. It's not just about territory. Yes, greatest one of the greatest Russian and Soviet strategists, Alexander Svechin, wrote in his fundamental treatise from 1927, which is called Strategy. Surprise, surprise. He said that, yeah, taking the ground is necessary evil. Which you need to accomplish by achieving your main objective of the physical annihilation of the enemy force. And this is exactly what happens. But that's the whole, this completely differs from the so-called strategic school of thought or whatever is left of it in NATO countries. They still believe that running, getting those, you know, square mileage somehow defines your success. No. And the strategists and general staff, they don't think like that. But that's what I was trying to, I wrote 4 books on it. I'm writing now 5 books, 5th book, you know, on that. This is not how war works, you know. So, but again, they never learned any lessons from the Eastern Front in World War II. And as a result, we have this situation and they still look at it and say, oh yeah, it's slow. No, it is not, because every day, if you look attentively at today's tally, yet again, almost 1,500 killed KIAs of the Ukrainian armed forces. And basically, until they run completely out of mobilizational resource, which they are near it, that's it.
Yeah, and I'm going to get to that in just a second. But here in the last one I want to look at is Kupiansk. And when you zero in here, you can see, again, most of the city's already in red, and there's not that much on this side that's still left in the gold of the Ukraine side. What can you tell us about what's happening here?
Oh, I mean, if you look attentively again, the bottleneck, if you look, it's the, you know, yes, the extremities, that means the fire operational surrounding, it's fire control of this bottleneck. This is what Russians do. They love to control lines of communication because you have to, again, operational art 101. And so, yeah, you can try to escape on foot, as many do, but the only thing you have left is basically suffer from hunger, from thirst, and you have the option, go and surrender. If not, they will try, as you can see yourself, 2 highways, not highways really, one of them is railroad. They will try to, you know, escape. They will be killed while escaping, and still they will be corralled and, you know, made to surrender or will be killed. It's all simple as that. In war, you have to kill the enemy. And that's the simple truth of it.
And you mentioned about the human capital, how much the Ukraine side has that's going down. They are actually bleeding, not just on the battlefield, but over their borders. This report here, it was in some of the British newspapers and was reported here on X by Yulia Mendel, who was the former, speaker of the for the Zelensky regime before she resigned. Yeah. And she says almost 100,000 fighting age Ukrainian men have left the country in just the past 2 months after Zelensky eased departure rules. Poland's border guard said 99,000 Ukrainian men aged between 18 and 22 had crossed the frontier, the primary route out of the country, since regulations to ensure that Kiev had enough soldiers were relaxed at the end of August. And then she says, she makes this comment here, in comparison, the entire British army has around 70,000 active duty personnel here, and 100,000 have left in just the last 2 months. And then you add on top of that, I think I saw a report, you can tell me if I'm right or wrong on this, that said somewhere around 500,000 Ukraine soldiers had deserted at one point or another in this calendar year alone. And then now then there's more and more insufficient numbers of forced mobilization. It's just, and now then you add on top of that everything you just mentioned about the literal casualties every day, killed and wounded on the battlefield. It just doesn't seem like Ukraine can survive much longer.
Well, I mean, correct, by the way. Yeah, Deutsche Welle, Germany, by the way, now cutting off their those benefits, free money, basically, you know, for Ukrainian refugees. And that's the result of their activities of NATO and Zelensky regime, who is a puppet of people from Brussels and Washington, D.C. They wanted it. They observe it. They complicit in the annihilation of the Ukrainian nation, of the Ukrainian man. And basically why they, escape for the 18 and 22-year-olds. 18-year-old is just a kid, you know. It's not really fighting man. You, even to turn the 18-year-old kid into the fighting man, you need at least a couple of years, you know, to turn him into the some kind of the real military material. So it's the saving of the sperm bank of Ukrainian nation. That's the only reason, because at some point of time, this is how CIA thinks, this is how so-called strategists in Pentagon think, that, we need to save somebody to give the birth, as they were saving the Banderite and Nazi collaborators, moving them from Great Britain to Canada and to United States. And that's pretty much the same plan. The problem is that it doesn't matter what they do. It's not those methods, so to speak. They are very, very uncultured and limited in their worldview people. They constantly try to repeat some pattern like it was during the Cold War 1.0. This is not it. And the problem is, as Mr. Medvedev stated, you continue to do more of that, more territories will come to Russia. Simple as that. With the population. And we, again, as Pokrovsk demonstrated, yet again, obviously hidden from the Western public by the mainstream media, they hide behind civilians now. They always did. Just today, Investigative Committee of Russia returned remnants of 300 bodies of women, children, old men, civilians in Kursk Oblast to their relatives. They have been executed by the Ukrainian forces. Women have been raped. Children were used as their live targets. This is West's responsibility. And while we definitely talk a lot about Gaza and, you know, all things which is happening there, they don't understand that more than 2 million Ukrainian men have been slaughtered because of the plans of those people. So-called, you know, geniuses with Ivy League degrees, which are useless, you know, degree meals, but they thought that they know what they're dealing with. I wrote 11 years ago, it's on my blog, one of the first posts was saying, unleashing this hell in Ukraine, they don't understand what they're getting themselves into. They're going to lose big. And this is exactly how it happened, because they essentially poked Russia where they were not supposed to do it. I am pretty much, you know, outspoken on this issue. And those people, you know, until the new generation of the politicians in the United States and possibly doubt it, but still in Europe emerges, these people committed their crime against humanity. They just do not want to admit it, but they will. It's inevitable.
And Gary keeps showing headline after headline here. This is, you know, not any kind of propaganda. This is just news that are across the board from all sides. You're talking about what's happening, and the battlefield says what it does. Before I let you go today, I want to ask you a couple other kind of related things, and we're going to look at we showed you earlier something President Trump said aboard Air Force One yesterday on this issue here with the Russia-Ukraine war. He had some other things to say, too, and he was talking about more from the strategic point of view, how he believes that his use of tariffs is providing national security for the United States of America.
Without tariffs, without our being able to use tariffs freely, openly, and in every way, we are really would suffer tremendously from a national security standpoint. Other countries use tariffs against us. If we weren't able to openly and freely use tariffs against them, I'll give you an example, China. That was going to be a disaster for the world, and I was able to settle it very quickly, very easily, because I was able to use tariffs. It's total national security. And economic health is also part of national security, by the way. But without tariffs, our country would be in great jeopardy.
Wow. I mean, who knew that he made China all afraid of by using these tariffs? Maybe you've already answered the question, but what say you?
I mean, the real national security threat to the United States is a Wall Street and financial system, which is run by crooks. It's so that's the national security threat. China, he met with Xi for 1 hour, 40 minutes. And he looked like the beaten, you know, boy after this meeting. And considering the fact that obviously you have interpreters working there. So out of those 1 hour, 40 minutes, probably 1 hour was basically the interpreters delivering, you know, their translation to respective leaders. So it tells you pretty much everything you need to know, that China doesn't give China already can, which already they did, they can remove the access to the rare earth metals or, you know, resources. And they can open this valve when they want. They can close it when they want. And again, many people do not understand. China's real economy is gigantic. It is so much larger than American one that it's difficult to even to explain, that you cannot scare China other than playing around with the shipping lanes of communications, which are critical for China. For example, Indian lanes of communications, which are critical for the more than 25% of the energy supplied from the Middle East and Iran to China. And you have to force China constantly in some kind of the position where it has to mind those things. Because, well, United States Navy is still around. And it's, God forbid, of course, if it goes down to this way, this path. But so it is all game. But China, you cannot scare them, really. You know, you can threaten the shipping lanes of communications, but we already see what is happening. The all more main supply lines are being moved or already are in or being moved inside the Eurasian landmass from Russia to China. And, of course, the Arctic route, suddenly, you know, Chinese are sending now the, you know, their things there. And they get, for example, liquefied natural gas from Novatek's facilities, which are at the Sabetta port, which is also covered by Russian icebreakers, nuclear icebreakers, and forces of the Northern and Pacific Fleet of Russia. So it's like, okay. So try to, you know, and then, of course, there is another thing which everybody knows and nobody wants to talk about it. A dollar is now irrelevant, essentially, in the payment systems.
Yeah, moving in the wrong direction as well. One interesting place where the tariffs have not been very effective, even in Trump's telling, and that is in Venezuela.
We'll see what happens with Venezuela. Venezuela sent us thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people from prisons, from mental institutions, drug addicts, and so did other countries. That's the bad. I mean, other countries did it too, because we were run by very stupid people. Very, very stupid people. Biden was the worst president in the history of our country by far. We had open borders, and many countries, the Congo, many countries, they sent their prisoners. They sent prisoners. They sent drug dealers. They sent drug addicts. They sent anybody, anybody that they didn't want. They sent them through our country. And Venezuela was one of the worst abusers.
I don't know. Maybe I've been spending so much time with the Russia-Ukraine war and the Middle East and things that are going on there. Maybe I missed hundreds of thousands of Venezuelan crazy institutions flooding into America. Did I miss something?
Me too. I mean, obviously, I'm missing something. However, there is a certain truth to his. That's the problem with Trump. Sometimes he inadvertently says some things which are at least partially true. There is no doubt that, for example, drug cartels, especially from Mexico and other Central American countries, they are infiltrating the United States. As many people now say, their money and influence is even on the Capitol Hill, which is not surprising. It's just the matter. Most of those congressmen and senators are for sale, so they don't care whom they sell themselves to. But our point is obviously, yeah, Venezuelans, hundreds of thousands of mental and drug addicts. This is the first time I heard about it. MS-13, that's the whole other story. But, I mean, he invents all kinds of the justifications. And so what can I say? He is preparing some kind of the regime change or sort of attempt at it. All the Tulsi Gabbard stated 2 days ago that the regime change policies are over. We'll see. I mean, the United States moves some assets, including to Puerto Rico now. Well, they may try to launch something at Venezuela. I doubt there will be any kind of the serious action on the ground, except for the special forces. That's about it. And that's it. The United States has no resources to really fight the war in the country, which is, by the way, three times the size of the area of Vietnam. It's jungle, mountains, rivers. And as Doug McGregor correctly stated, there's 100,000 of Colombians there sitting on the border, waiting for to get into. If God forbids something happens to Venezuela, and so it's all posturing at now. But that's as far as I know. I'm not a specialist in Latin America. I definitely have no any insights there. I just look at the moving of the assets to Puerto Rico and around, So, but most likely what it's going to be, the best we can observe, God forbid, even that goes there. It's some kind of launching of the, tomahawks, then inserting some seals, whatever. That's about it.
Well, and that's what I actually wanted to ask your opinion about, because, I mean, you obviously studied the art of war, not even just in specific locations. And if you see that amount of firepower that we have in there, and it's relatively, I mean, it's big in one sense, but it's really small in another sense when you're talking about a country the size of Venezuela that you just mentioned there. When you see that number of assets, what is even possible militarily? I mean, something like a special operations to go in where, I mean, I don't know. Do you think that there's even the theoretical possibility they could do a snatch and grab on Maduro himself?
Well, they probably will try. I will be very sorry for people who would try to do this. But there is another thing. I see you showing this map from Reuters. Yeah, they move some assets. But again, in order to... Remember, we had the Vietnam War. By the end of Vietnam War, there were more than 600,000 American troops on the ground. And still it didn't get anywhere near to proper, you know, what victory or even achieving any tangible political aims. United States can launch things. United States has about 2.5 U.S. Navy, 2,500 of the Tomahawks of the Block 4 and 5 variety, which are the most advanced, albeit it's an old missile anyway. They can launch whatever, 2,000 Tomahawks within some period of time. Guess what's going to happen? U.S. Navy will simply run out of the Tomahawks. And the world will be pointing out to the United States, look what you're doing. You're just bombing, you know, the country which is not, does not represent any real serious threat to you. That's it.
And what are we to make of this big Russian transport that was seen in Caracas here recently? What do we think might have been on board?
I don't know. They're difficult to say. Listen, there could have been just merely military advisors, you know. So IL-76 can take on board, well, obviously it can take on board a couple of companies of the paratroopers, but that's not the case here at all. It's either some kind of the advisory people, plus maybe some type of the hardware, whatever they were moving there. I would say, but again, this is not... don't quote me on that. This is pure speculation on my part. They can certainly transport number of the Yakhant, which are the shorter version of the P-800 Onyx anti-ship missiles, which under the what is called converter thing could be stuck on the... don't forget, Venezuela has about 21 Su-30 MK-2s. These are fairly modern fighters. This is not your Su-27. Those are modern for generation 4 plus fighters, which are capable of carrying some really nasty weapons, such as which Venezuela does have, which is KH-31. And this is anti-shipping and anti-radiation missile with a range of 250 kilometers. But obviously, Yakhant, appearance of Yakhant, is a direct threat to any kind of the large U.S. Navy asset. But I doubt that Russia actually transferred that. There could have been some hardware related to electronic warfare, maybe. Who knows? You know, I don't know. But maybe just simply military people who went there to organize defense.
Well, I guess we'll find out if that's something we discover later on. I actually hope we don't find out.
Well, yeah, let's hope.
There
yeah.
is no attack.
Nobody needs that. No Venezuelans yeah. or American people should die, or American soldiers should die for that. That's pure, simple adventurism. It has 100%. No political or strategic sense other than, again, you know, the chest thumping thing. And so, yeah, let's hope that it goes nowhere. And, well, we'll see anyhow.
We will see. Well, listen, really appreciate you coming on today and especially giving us your views about what's going on the Russian side there and making it so clear about what the actual Russian objectives are and their strategic operations. So that's very, very helpful. Also, just to point people back, you mentioned a video coming out later today on Smoothie X12. People should go there and watch that online and they'll be able to see the thing. I'm sure I will do the same. So look forward to seeing that.
Thank you. Talk to you later, Danny. Bye-bye.
Talk to you later. Thank you very much. And be sure and like and subscribe if you haven't done that yet. And we will look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.